So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, chapter 8, text number 38. Dhruva Maharaja leaves home. Nunam bhavan bhagavato yo angacha parameshtinaha vidudhan natache vinam githaya jagato akrabad Nunam, certainly, bhavan, your honor, Bhagavata, of the Lord, Jaha, that which, Angacha, born from the body, Parameshtinaha, Lord Brahma, Vichudan, by playing on, Atache, travel all over, Binam, a musical instrument, Hitaya, for the welfare, Jagata, of the world, Arka Bhag, like the sun. Translation of purport by His Divine Grace, Sabhoi Charanaravinda Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. My dear Lord, you are a worthy son of Lord Brahma, and you travel playing on your musical instrument, the Veena, for the welfare of the entire universe. You are like the sun which rotates in the universe for the benefit of all living beings. Please repeat. My dear Lord, you are a worthy son of Lord Brahma, and you travel playing on your musical instrument, the Veena, for the welfare of the entire universe. You are like the sun which rotates in the universe for the benefit of all living beings. Therefore, Dhruva Maharaj, although a young child, expressed his hope that he might be offered the benediction of a kingdom which would exceed in opulence those of his father and grandfather. He also expressed his gladness that he had met such an exalted person as Narada, whose only concern was to illuminate the world. Like the sun, which rotates all over the universe, only for the purpose of benefiting the inhabitants of all planets, Narad Muni travels all over the universe for the sole purpose of performing the best welfare activity for the entire universe by teaching everyone how to become a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, Dhruva Maharaj felt fully assured that Narad Muni could fulfill his desire, even though the desire was very extraordinary. The example of the sun is very significant. The sun is so kind that he distributes his sunshine everywhere without consideration. Dhruva Maharaj requested Narad Muni to be merciful to him. He pointed out that Narad Muni travels all over the universe just for the purpose of doing good to all conditioned souls. He requested that Narad Muni show his mercy by awarding him the benefit of his particular desire. Dhruva Maharaj was strongly determined to fulfill his desire, and it was for that purpose that he had left his home and palace. So here Narad Muni, able to travel anywhere in the universe, even to the spiritual world. But here, he is traveling. What is the purpose of his traveling? For the welfare of the entire universe. And again, for the benefit of all living beings. And again, for the sole purpose of performing the best welfare activities for the entire universe by teaching everyone how to become a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And again, Narada travels all over the universe for the purpose of doing good to all conditioned souls. So Narada Muni is our hero, because we are a preaching movement, and Narada Muni is our ideal. Well, wherever he goes, that's all he does. He preaches wherever he goes. Not for the sake of just preaching, but to help all the living entities in the universe regain their Krishna consciousness. So he's performing this the best service to humanity by teaching everyone that they are the eternal servants of Krishna and engaging everyone in devotional service. So there is no higher welfare work than this activity of reinstating the jiva again in service to Krishna. So this is Narada's business. He travels around playing his universe. Narada Muni Bajaya Veena Radhika Ramana. He's flying around, striking his veena, causing wonderful ragas to emanate, chanting Radhika Ramana, Radhika Ramana, and all the different names of the Lord. To enlighten the whole universe. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in that song actually that how Narada Muni goes, travels throughout the universe chanting Hare Krishna. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that when the whole universe is chanting Hare Krishna, then the Vaishnavas are satisfied. At least one universe is chanting Hare Krishna, they can deal with one universe. But when the whole universe is vibrating with Hare Krishna, then the Vaishnavas are satisfied. So we try to do a little bit on our planet, but ultimately the Vaishnavas are concerned with the whole universe, the great Vaishnavas. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was walking on this road. This is called Bhaktisiddhanta Road here, outside. And he had it constructed when Sir John Anderson came to visit Mayapur, so he had a road made in one day. It was like mud piled up, and I think they put the banana leaves over it. So there's a story in the Bible, something like that, isn't it? When Jesus came, they put the palm leaves or something. Anyway, he was walking on this road. And this story is told by one of his disciples, Bhakti Ratnagar Damodar Maharaj, who used to live next door to us. Then he suddenly stopped and he looked up and he said, "How degraded this age of Kali Yuga is becoming." He said, "Even on Chandraloka," he said, "they are becoming so degraded." So he was conscious of what was going on in different planets. And many of his disciples said, they concluded, he indicated sometimes he may be going off, he leaves this place, he's going to Chandraloka as his next field of preaching activities. Damodar Maharaj said, when he said that, he said, then I could understand what the meaning of Jagat Guru was. And Prabhupada says, you know, those who go all over the world, they can be called Jagat Guru. He said the gurus sit in the village and somehow or another they worship them, call them Jagat Guru. They don't even leave the village. Prabhupada was preaching all over the world, but here we see Bhaktisiddhanta, he's interested in different planetary systems also. So this is the ability of these great Vaishnavas. They're concerned with the living entities in this material world who are suffering. So there's another similar story. Anyway, the point was Bhaktivinoda Thakur was on a universal japa walk. Chance him round whenever we go around the park sometimes, he went round. Then Lord Shiva and Yamaraj were having a discussion on the verse in Bhagavad Gita that even if one performs the most abominable activities, if he is rightly situated in devotional service, then he should be considered saintly, sadhu. Then the next verse says, very quickly he becomes righteous. Declare it boldly, O Arjuna, that my devotees will never perish. So they had a question about this. They couldn't answer. So then Bhaktivinoda Thakur was coming past and he said, Japa war. So they said, there's a Vaishnava, let's ask him. Called him over. They said, we've got this contradiction here. First, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that a person performs abominable activities, but very soon he becomes a sadhu. Sadhu means saint, means above the modes of material nature. Next verse he says, but very quickly he becomes righteous. So righteousness means dharma, that's still within the modes of material nature. So first he's saying he's a sadhu, he's above the material modes of nature. Then the next verse he says, very quickly he becomes righteous. That means he's still within the modes of material nature. So what is the siddhanta here? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, yes, he said the first verse that he performs abominable activities, but still he engages in devotional service. So he's situated constitutionally perfect, so he's above the modes of material nature. He's engaged in devotional service. He's situated rightly. He said the next verse, very soon he becomes righteous. It's not applying to that person who committed the abominable activity, it's applying to people who criticize him. But still, but very quickly they'll become righteous because the devotees are always engaged in devotional activities. And this story was told by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. But anyway, you can see the nature of these great souls. They're always interested in the universal welfare. Sometimes they come here and grace this planet, and well, we're able to take advantage of them. And better still, we're able to serve them, we're able to help them in their mission. That is the greatest glory. In the beginning of creation, when the Lord is waking, he's sleeping in his yoga nidra. And the personified Vedas are around him, they're offering, you know, many, many prayers, glorifying him. Gradually he wakes up hearing his glories being chanted, like the king does that. They have their professional reciters. They come into their bedroom in the morning or just outside and they're chanting their glories, and he wakes up feeling very good, you know, how powerful he is, how much property he's got, how many kings he's conquered. So similarly, the personified Vedas, they're glorifying the Lord as he's waking up. Of course, these unlimited glories. But you have that they say your best, your greatest glory, the best of all your wonderful glories, is that you show mercy upon the living entities who are suffering. And you give them an opportunity to go back to Godhead. So please wake up and again glance over material energy, inject all the living entities so they can get a chance again to become Krishna conscious and go back to Godhead. So it's the Lord's compassionate desire and the desire of his devotees that the Lord manifests the world. And in the third canto it's also saying that that the Lord is lying in yoga nidra, mystic sleep. This is the position of Atmarama, so he's self-satisfied. Whether it's a creation or not a creation, he's laying in the Karana ocean, he's completely self-satisfied, so he's indifferent to anything, being self-satisfied. But it says that he felt something was lacking. Very interesting point there. He felt something lacking. He's Atmarama, self-satisfied. What can be lacking? The Kumaras were self-satisfied. we go over to Vaikuntha or not, we stay here, what's the difference? They were completely self-satisfied. Of course, when the Kumaras went there, just out of curiosity, then they actually, when they smelt the aroma of the tulsi leaves from Krishna's lotus feet, then they became attracted. And they said, how is that? Such a beautiful scent. It's given us more pleasure than our own self. Usually we're immersed in self, Atmarama, we're Atmarana, we're floating in the bliss of Brahman. There's nothing to equal this, but now we're getting a smell, the sense, the pleasure from this is even greater than our own Atmarama, our self-satisfaction. How is this? So then they get introduced into actual devotional service to the lotus feet of the Supreme Person of Godhead, which is far superior than any other kind of liberation. So here, Vishnu in the beginning of creation, he's supposed to be self-satisfied, but he's feeling a bit incomplete. But it's a very good lesson for a verse for defeating Mayavada philosophy. Because that's their goal, they want to become Atmarama. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was teaching that verse, when he was preaching to the Mayavadis, he spoke on that verse. They loved that verse. But when they heard how Mahaprabhu had spoken it, they completely changed their minds. They never heard an explanation like that. So here is the Lord himself and Atmarama, but he felt something lacking. So how can it be Atmarama if there's something lacking? So what was that lacking? That was that his children, his sons, all in this state of forgetfulness of Krishna. He needs the Supreme Father out of his affection, his feeling. That is what is lacking. Not that he needs. He has unlimited billions and billions and billions of servants. There may be few in one universe or a few universes. It's no difference, not a big thing for him. But out of affection, because of their being in an ignorant state and being out of their pure conscious Krishna consciousness, he's feeling something lacking for them, not for himself. He's completely satisfied. But for the living entities who are bound up, he's feeling lacking. So it's a good verse. We can show that to the Mayavadis. You want your Atmarama, but look, you see, even Vishnu is not satisfied when he gets it. So to bring them to the point of devotional service. So then the Lord wakes up and he gives his greatest mercy. He wakens the jivas and engages them in activity again. But he is speaking the Vedas. He is sending the Radha Muni. He is sending so many representatives. He's coming himself in so many different incarnations. He's speaking Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam. Just to give them that chance. Okay, now you've got an opportunity. You're awake. Wake up. Follow in the footsteps of the sadhu, read the shastra, then wind up this business, go back to Godhead. So that's his compassion. And at the end of the universe, when they don't do it, many of them, he becomes angry in the form of an antashesh. He's actually angry with them. As Vishnu is compassionate, but at the end, in the form of an antashesh, what's the use? Now we went through this whole creation of the universe, it's just for you and me. It's nothing to do with Krishna's pleasure. This is for our pleasure. We went through this whole business, which complicated, we can't understand it. Even devotees can't understand, comprehend, what to speak of scientists. But anyway, it's all for our business. Krishna's created this whole universe for the field of activities for the rebellious living entities who are here. So even after getting a chance, that they don't utilize it fully, then Ananta, what's the use, these stupid living entities? We gave him a chance and burns up the whole universe, fire pours from it, burns up the universe. But anyway, we see the compassion of the Lord, and this is his greatest mercy, the personified, the greatest of his mercy. And it is, literally. We are suffering like anything going through the repetition of birth and death, and it's only ultimately the mercy of the Lord that gets us out of this horrible situation. There's a story here in the Nabadvipa Mahabharata, King Shubhananda Sen, that's in Gaudam Deepa, yes. He was a great king, and he just believed in having a good time, conquering other kings and getting many wives and getting all the riches and living a very, very nice life. And then once Narad Muni came to see him, knowing his fallen condition, Narad was very merciful upon him. Generally Narad picks on important people because he knows that they are leaders. What great men do, others will follow. So he generally picks on exalted personalities and gives them so much enlightenment. Sometimes he gives them also the disappointment when he, like Daksha's sons, they're all doing austerity. Daksha had all these nice sons to propagate the universe, and Narada Muni came and preached to them, made terms all into brahmacharis, and they said, we're not going to get involved in family life. So some people get disappointed with Narada Muni. But anyway, his business is always to free these living entities. And so he shows up and he starts to preach to King Shivana Sen. I read it, so he's, you know, I guess he's preaching about 10 minutes, but you know, what is this? Well, a few moments association with the sadhu. He said, "Oh King, your days are going by uselessly with thoughts of material wealth and gain. Know that this wealth is of no value. The supreme wealth is spiritual knowledge. Just consider that in your heart. You have no relationship with your wife, sons or friends. After death, they will all immerse your body in the water and then return to their homes. If one cannot claim anything of his own, then why hold on to this false hope and aspiration? This thirst for material objects, which are like drops of water, with no capacity to quench the thirst. If you think that by getting happiness you can avoid distress, and therefore you must earn wealth, that is also false, because this life itself is impermanent, not lasting more than 100 years. Therefore know the truth. You must go beyond this world of illusion, to the place where there is happiness without pain. By what process can one gain a result in which there is no fear, pain and greed? By what process can one attain a result in which there is no fear, pain or greed? Simply by renunciation or cultivation of knowledge, one cannot get this result. By vairagya and jnana, one can get freedom from material bondage and merge into the Brahman. But in Brahman there is no bliss. Rather, I say, merging into Brahman is utterly condemned. For it is annihilation of the self. And by this liberation you lose material enjoyment and nothing is good is gained. Just consider that aspect of liberation. The wise man does not accept the path of material enjoyment or liberation, bhukti or mukti, but rather engages in devotional service to Krishna. That person is free from the attractions of material enjoyment and completely attracted to the serving the lotus feet of Krishna. The process of bhakti may be divided into three parts, sambandha, abhideya and prayojana. The living entity is a servant of Krishna. Therefore, without performing devotional service, everything is lost. The tree of bhakti, however, bears fruit in the form of love of Godhead. That fruit is a necessity or the ultimate goal and eternal treasure of the living entities. Bhakti and mukti are insignificant in comparison. Krishna is the sun full of knowledge and bliss. Maya is his shadow or perverted reflection. The living entity is an infinitesimal part of Krishna's effulgence. Because of this marginal nature, when all the living entities contact Maya, then Maya captures and binds him. When one goes away from Krishna, he can only go towards Maya. By Maya's contact, the living entity becomes attached to fruitive activities. In Maya's net, one suffers while wandering throughout the universe. Karma and jnana promise relief from the suffering and deliverance from the world, but they are unable to give it. While wandering from body to body, if one happens to meet a pure devotee, he will receive real shraddha or pure faith. By association with a devotee, you eventually take up the worship of Krishna. Then he will give up all unwanted habits, anathas. Then he will become firmly fixed, nishtha. in devotional service. And as one continues to engage in devotional service, he develops a taste, ruchi. Gradually this taste is the attachment, the shakti, and turns into bhava, and bhava becomes prema. This is the progression of pure bhakti. Hearing, chanting, remembering, serving, worshipping, bowing down, servitude, friendship, and self-surrender. These are the nine processes. One who performs these in association with devotees attains Krishna prema. You are very fortunate, for your kingdom is in Navadvip. Your residence here is the beginning of your good fortune. Now develop faith by association with devotees and sing in the name of Krishna. Let the sun of prema rise within your heart. He said, very soon Gauranga will appear here. This is the Dharma of Gauranga. You are blessed by living here. He will perform here and he will send all the offenses away from your heart. While saying this, Narada Muni lost control of himself and began to dance and chant the name of Gauranga, 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 Gauranga. Then his Venus started chanting, Gauranga, 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 Gauranga. Oh Gauranga, when will blessed Kali Yuga come? When will Kali Yuga come? We're waiting for that blessed time. Saying this, Narada Muni went off, leaving the king filled with the prema. Crying the name of Gauranga, dancing and begging love of God from the devotees, he became free from material hankerings. Later while sleeping, the king saw Gauranga and Gadadhar with their associates dancing in the courtyard. Surrounding the golden form of Gauranga, they were all chanting Hare Krishna while dancing and embracing each other. Awakening, the king was in anxious and began weeping in separation from Gauranga. Then a voice spoke, O king, when I appear, you will be amongst my associates. Your name will be Buddhimanta Khan. And you will receive the treasure, the transcendental Dharma, and serve the lotus feet of Gauranga. Nityananda Prabhu was telling this story, and when he finished, Srivas Thakur was also there. He's an incarnation of Narada Muni. He just heard the whole story about himself, how he delivered the king. Immediately fell down fell unconscious. In great ecstasy. So we see the greatness of the devotees and the amount of welfare work they do on this planet. Srila Prabhupada also, who can compare to him? The service that Srila Prabhupada has done for this whole planet. And Prabhupada was just, he was like on a japa, wasn't he? 14 rounds. He went around the world 14 times, Prabhupada. And wherever he was, he's just like chanting Hare Krishna. And didn't seem to be doing much. Chanting Hare Krishna, talking to, enthusing the devotees. Just moving around. So many temples were popping up in his wake, everywhere. School, farm, temple, temple, temple. All Prabhupada was doing Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Giving class and preaching, moving to another place. And Prabhupada said that, you see, they had this Sarvani business, which is presenting Krishna. We're telling one to chant Hare Krishna. He said, Hare Krishna. He said, this means, we're addressing the energy of the Lord. Hare, Hare Krishna. He said, oh, energy of the Lord, please transfer us from the service of the material energy to the service of the spiritual energy. He said, this is the sum and substance of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. We're chanting Hare Krishna, O energy of the Lord, please transfer our service from the external energy to the internal energy. Prabhupada said, that's the essence of all our philosophy, that's the essence of our philosophy. And that's what we're doing, we're just chanting Hare Krishna, we're trying to come in tune with the spiritual energy, the spiritual potency, which we are, that is our original nature. And so this is what the Hare Krishna is doing, reviving our dormant Krishna consciousness. So this was all Srila Prabhupada did. gave us the essence in his philosophy just by getting us to chant Hare Krishna. Yeah, and he just said the whole world chanting Hare Krishna. You know. We say that Prabhupada, he was a Shaktivesh avatar, a very empowered personality, Shaktivesh avatar. Actually, this is not really a credit to call Prabhupada Shaktivesh avatar. He actually received the mercy of his spiritual master. He got the blessings of a pure devotee of Braja. Siddhanta Saraswati is an eternal resident of Braja, an eternal maidservant of Srimati Radharani, of Radharani Krishna. This is not as common. The avatars, even they can't get that. They can't get into Braja. So calling Prabhupada Shaktivesh avatar is not a very great glory. The glory is he's got the mercy of his spiritual master. He's able to enter into Braja Bhakti. Therefore Mahabhadanaya, that's why he's so merciful. He's making available which even the avatars can't get. The empowered avatars. The Radha Muni could get in there, but he had to change his body. I don't know if that was an eternal body or not in that past time. But anyway, he was able to get in. But I think they dipped him in the kund, he came out with a female body, so he could witness it. But he had to come out again. So this was Srila Prabhupada. He's what the world has never seen before. Krishna Prema Padayati. Before, generally, the Yuga Dharma said gives you Vaikuntha Prema, you can get love of Godhead and go back to Vaikuntha, but only in this little period when original Krishna comes, original Mahaprabhu comes, then his devotees come and give that Braja Prema. So they give the highest essence, but Prabhupada just did that, he didn't seem to do anything, he didn't do a lot of, what do you say? Like, you know, jumping up and down. He could have done. Of course, you could see it when he used to speak with these scientists and leaders and like that. He'd become very frustrated sometimes. You could see he was speaking to these world leaders, world religionists, scientists, nuclear scientists. There's one you can see with that Cardinal Daniel. There's a video of some French, I guess, priest, leader, pope or something, anyway. Right? Cardinal, kind of big position, that means leader of thousands, spiritual leader of thousands of people. And as usual with Christians, Prabhupada doesn't really get, he starts talking about cow killing. As long as you're sinful, you're not going to understand anything, so at least stop being sinful and killing cows. And that Cardinal Daniel is, but if there are many, many cows, they are wandering in the street, and if there are poppy, hungry people, then they can... And Prabhupada's sitting there, you can see he's fuming. He's getting really agitated. You see, he's a world leader. He hasn't even got the compassion to kill animals. Prabhupada, you see, he's getting really, really angry. And lots of those taste Prabhupada's like that. I was listening to one the other day, sort of a nuclear physicist. And, you know God. You don't know the name of God. So you learn from me. Oh, but Swami Sri, but you're admitting, you if you know God, then you chant his name. If you don't know, then you learn from me. You know God's name? Well, it is so deep. Then I give you a name. Can you accept it? They can't do it. Anyway, it didn't deter Prabhupada. He just went on and preached. He just gave the highest truth to everyone. I was reading that biography and how the remember they had that mantra rock dance and all the hippies when it was a big thing in Los Angeles, yeah? And Prabhupada went to that place also and preached, and there was all these rock groups and everything there. But I thought it was quite coincidental that there was one female singer, Janis Joplin, famous singer at that time, and she was singing a song, "Don't You Need Somebody to Love?" Everybody needs somebody to love. Don't you want somebody to love? Wouldn't you love somebody to love? And it's so kind of coincidence. This is Prabhupada's, the essence of his flow. She was singing that when Prabhupada went there. So it was like, you know, this is the essence of, you know, everybody wants love and to be loved. This is what we're searching for. This is the whole search on in the material existence. We want love and to be loved. That means our relationship with Krishna in the spiritual world. Because she was a Kami, she was singing a different tone, but it seemed like coincidental when Prabhupada just walked in there and started chanting Hare Krishna, and thousands and thousands of people, you know, just chanting Hare Krishna. This is Prabhupada's. It's Prabhupada's greatness. I was also reading that story of it's a book called The Journey Home. You've probably read it. Radhanath Maharaj, he's got one book, The Journey Home. And he's coming into India. They won't let him in, across the border. There is a long-haired teenager standing on the border. He's got a few paisa in his pocket, and they won't let him in. And he's saying, please, please let me in. He says, someday I promise to do good to all the people of India. I promise I will do some good. He said, honestly, sir, I want to help, I can help your people. Please let me in. Give me a chance. Where is that coming from? That's not from this birth. I also come across the border there, but I didn't have such feeling. I thought, I come to enjoy it. I come to help. I want to help your people. You've never even been here before. I can help, please. Give me a chance. So this, see, we have amongst our midst. So this Krishna consciousness. Here is a 5-year-old boy, Dhruva Maharaj, and he's getting it. It's something very, very exclusive. But it's not that exclusive that, you know, only grown-ups can get it, or intelligent people, little babies can't get it. It's exclusive for everyone. Here we see a position of a 5-year-old boy. He's attaining the perfection by the grace of Narad Muni. Of course, Narad Muni is trying to encourage him to go. Then Narad Muni is going to say, okay, he's going to give him encouragement to stay and perform his yoga practice. So what will the CPT say? Child protection team. That this Narad Muni, he's let this 5-year-old kid go and sit in the jungle all alone, and he's supposed to be a responsible personality, and he's letting a 5-year-old kid sit in the dangerous jungle. We get this CPT right here. See the consciousness. So there's our godbrother Kinash Prabhu. He was staying in Chitra's village. He may still be there, I don't know. In the village of Chitra in Braj. And he told me there was a little girl there, probably 5 years old. She went out and wandering around, and then she just sat down in one place, and she just sat there, and she wouldn't move. So the relatives, it's time to come home, she wouldn't come home, mother and father came. She just sat there, she just wouldn't move. And she was chanting some mantra or something like that. So, what did they do? They left her there. They put 4 pieces of wood in the ground and put a little cloth around, and they left it there. Her parents, well, she's a 5-year-old kid. She wasn't eating, she was just, and they left it there. And they said, well, it's coming from previous life. It's something she's got to get over with, so let her do it. You can say all you have to. What are you doing sitting there chanting mantras? Come back to your home. It's dangerous here. There's jackals and everything around. Tigers even there. Let it get it out of yourself. See, the parents are really understanding. Kinashir, I went to see her one night. See what she was doing. She was awake and when she was there, he said her eyes were like fire. I spoke to her for a little while and she didn't say much. But anyway, whatever it takes, we are bound up in this material world, whatever it takes us to get back to Godhead. So there are people who are concerned. We have great saintly persons, Narada Muni, Prabhupada. That's their only business. And even in parents, they're thinking of this child's spiritual welfare. They're not considering she's alone in the middle of the night in the wilderness. They're thinking of her, it's something she's going through, let her go through it. They're concerned with her spiritual well-being. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Shri Prabhupada ki, Samaveda Bhaktavrinda ki, Nitaya Gopremanandi, Hare Hare.